Welcome to Conversations with Owens Community College President, Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Welcome to the newest episode of the award-winning Conversations podcast. I'm Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Thank you for listening today. Whether this is your first time with us or if you're a longtime follower, we are so happy that you're joining us as we explore the issues and meet the people who are important to Northwest Ohio and to Owens Community College. Please enjoy our previous episodes and subscribe to Conversations to join us for future episodes. Today, I am so excited to welcome Sandy Spang, Executive Director of TMACOG, or the Toledo Metropolitan Area Council of Governments. Sandy is an alum of Bowling Green State University with a Bachelor of Fine Arts. She's dedicated over 19 years to economic development and community growth. Her career includes such pivotal roles as the Deputy Director of Economic Development for the City of Toledo and serving on the Toledo City Council. A business owner herself, Sandy's efforts to create a more equitable entrepreneurial ecosystem and her dedication to regional planning underscore her commitment to fostering economic growth and community development in Northwest Ohio. Hi, Sandy, and thank you for being our guest today. Sandy, welcome to Conversations. I'm so excited to have you with us. I know that this has been a long time coming. You're a busy person, and so we're thrilled that we were finally able to get this scheduled. So thanks for being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
So one of the things that we ask all of our guests is about higher education, their journey, their path. And so how did you know that you wanted an education beyond high school and you went to Bowling Green? And so how did that fit in for you in your career?
Well, you know, I was one of the first members of our family to get a higher education. Mm-hmm. My parents, my grandparents did not have college educations, and my older brother went to the University of Toledo. Mm-hmm. And when I suggested that I wanted to go to a college that wasn't in Toledo, my parents were really surprised and concerned. And I was accepted to a couple of colleges that were further away. And, you know, they were nervous about that. Mm-hmm. And BGSU had a great art department. I was really interested in art. So I went to Bowling Green. And I will tell you that I think two things really stand out. Mm-hmm. One, a professor really took an interest in me. I did have to work while I was in college. Mm-hmm. And I started working. I graduated early from high school. At that time, you were able to graduate if once you had your credits. And so right. I got out a semester early. And so I started working, interestingly, in the jewelry business and got a job at a jewelry store. And so I took a jewelry class. I was an art student. I took a jewelry class. And that professor took such an interest in me. Mm-hmm. And that eventually became my major, jewelry right. and metalsmithing. But it was more than that. It was that interest and that mentoring mm-hmm. that went well beyond just the subject matter. And mm-hmm. I'd never had a professor show that kind of interest and guidance. And I've tried to pass that on. Mm-hmm. That's been very important to me. And then while I was in college, my grandmother passed away. Mm. And she'd been so important in my life. Right. And she left me a small bequest. And I thought about, what do I do that will be meaningful? Mm-hmm. And I had not taken the required number of foreign language classes in high school. How I actually graduated, but I guess I needed them for college entrance. And somehow they said, well, you're going to have to take foreign language then in college. So I had taken French classes. Uh-huh. I think you study abroad junior year. Mm-hmm. But I thought, well, I can't afford to do that. Well, now I suddenly could, but I went my senior year. That was such a pivotal experience in my life. I drank my first cappuccino in a stand-up coffee bar in Italy. And that was before there was espresso in the United uh-huh. States, except maybe in an Italian restaurant in New York City. But I studied in France, in the Loire district in France, in, mm-hmm. in a town called Tours. And all of those works of art that I had seen in art history classes, I saw them in museums. Mm-hmm. I could go for a weekend in Paris or in London. And I will admit, my first Botticelli, I just cried like a baby. It was just such an expanding experience for me to have a Eurail pass and to be able to get on a train and go to another country 3 hours later and to be able to experience those cultural differences. it had such an impact on my life. So those two experiences really stand out.
And to be able to do that, I mean, study abroad is so hugely important because I think you have a different perspective for your own humanity as a result, and our place in the world culture versus just whatever we've experienced up until that point. You got to immerse yourself in your language and to be able to do that. And then also the independence. I mean, to be a first generation student and then not only go away to college, but then to study abroad, there's a level of confidence and independence that comes with that that you may not have had otherwise.
That's absolutely true. To put that backpack on, and I'm sure my parents had great trepidation, but you're right. I think that made me a much more independent person to have had that experience.
Yeah. So, well, and so there important. Was there were no cell phones, and so they weren't calling you every no, 5 minutes.
And it was very expensive. You know, you're right. And I waited for those letters. I think it was a full 6 weeks before I got the first letter. I mean, those airmail letters took forever to move back and forth. Yeah. I made a quick call and said, I'm here and I'm okay. But that was, you know, that was the kind of conversations you had back then. I think you and I have talked about this. My daughter is in her 9th year living in France and she's a translator. And we're on WhatsApp. I mean, she'll send me, you know, do you think this top looks cute or something? You know, I mean, we just have ordinary life together because of technology.
Right.
And so it's a world apart, but it was a very independent experience.
Yeah, that is awesome. So you talked about the cappuccino. You were in France. The pastries, the wine, the cheese.
Yes. There's so many wonderful things that you got to experience.
From that, though, you became an entrepreneur. From that experience, you graduated, you were in the jewelry business, you were in the coffee business. You kind of have this path of independence that you're going to take your experiences, your knowledge, your passions, and you're going to create what you want it to be at any given point in time.
I like to say I follow the breadcrumbs, you know, I take every experience and I build on it as I move to the next experience in life. And so after graduation, the company that I was working for, I had been with them all the way through college, offered me a full-time position. I had also become a gemologist along the way. And so I became their appraiser. I had done a lot of design work. You know, I was sort of experiencing both the commercial retail side of the jewelry industry, and then I was also experiencing the sort of the artistic side. So I was doing appraisal work, design work, and the owner of the business tragically passed away. And at the age of 24, I became the diamond buyer for a 9-store chain.
Wow.
And I was going to New York City and I was negotiating to buy the loose diamonds for the company. And it was an incredible experience. And again, another pivotal experience in my life. I like to say that everybody should work retail at some point in their life because you have to adjust to the people who come through the door.
Yep.
So we sold a lot of engagement rings in the early years that I worked in the jewelry business. And so people would come in and you're celebrating with them. But they're, you know, different personalities, different relationships. So you have to very quickly analyze, how should I communicate? Kind of catch their mood. The same thing, too, later in the coffee business. You know, people come through the door and they bring their experiences of the day. And everyone needs something different, right? Sometimes people may think they need a cup of coffee, but maybe they just need someone to say hello and greet them. And so I think that it helps you so much in life to have had that experience of having to just meet a lot of people that you don't know who's coming through the door next. So I think that's an important skill. It helped me certainly later as I campaigned for elected office. I certainly looked back on those experiences and thought those were helpful.
It's the whole, you have to take people as they are and who they are. And you don't get to choose in retail who comes through your door. You know, we talk about, you know, belonging and understanding and communication and all those things. It helps with all of that because you don't get to choose.
And, you know, understanding customer service is so important because as an elected official, I really needed to understand that my job was to serve the citizens of the city. I ran for office to serve them. And at TMACOG, at my current position, the Toledo Metropolitan Area Council of Governments, the 83 members of TMACOG, those are voluntary members mm-hmm. of this Council of Governments. And so, again, I'm serving them. And so I think learning and understanding customer service is very important.
Absolutely.
And so having that early experience where you really understand what customer service is, I think that's important.
It's hugely important, and I think that it helps us focus on the needs of others.
And then sales. I've often said pretty much every job is a sales job. Even if you're selling an idea, mm-hmm. you have to know how to express yourself. If you believe in something, even when I was bringing a piece of legislation forward, mm-hmm. if you really believe in something, you need to know how to express it.
Right.
And be able to tell people why it's important and why they should support you. Mm-hmm. If you're an architect, you need to be able to say why this design is great. If you believe in something, know how to sell it.
When you think of all the skills that you've packaged throughout at least that part of your career, there's that entrepreneurial spirit, there's that business acumen, there's the desire for service. How does that create a thread from then to TMACOG? Because there's similarities, but there's got to be some differences as well. And so, like, if you had to kind of put a headline on what you've been able to do, what does that look like?
I think if you go all the way back, I mean, mm-hmm. I think what your characteristics as a child can mm-hmm. kind of, you know, they carry through, right? Mm-hmm. I was always an idealist. I always wanted to fix things. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to make things better. I always wanted to fight for the underdog. I grew up in a home. My oldest brother, Steve, who was a very important person in my life, had Down syndrome. And that was at a time when he was born in 1955. Mm-hmm. And so it was pretty unusual for someone with Down syndrome to stay at home and grow up at home with their family.
Right.
My mom was 21 years old when he was born. My dad was 22. And they made the decision that he would grow up at home. And then wow. my brother Tom was born after Steve, and then I was born. And so that was an unusual situation at that time. And mm-hmm. it was a pioneering time. I don't know if people know this, but Lucas County was a pioneering county. We were the first county in the country mm-hmm. to offer educational and employment services to folks with developmental disabilities at no cost to their families. And a lot of that was because of Josina Lott. And people have heard of Lott Industries. They mm-hmm. may not know that there was a person behind that. And Josina Lott started Lark Lane School. She actually started a school at her kitchen table, teaching children wherever they were at and uh-huh. whatever their ability was. And so my brother went to that very first day that Lark Lane School opened. And they didn't get the educational dollars from the state that public schools got. Eventually, when children with developmental disabilities were given those dollars, that's when mainstreaming in public schools began. Mm-hmm. But when my brother went to school, that wasn't available. And so I was always a fighter and a champion for mm-hmm. my brother. So I think the thread that you could weave through that is that I always wanted to make things better. I always wanted to be that champion and solve problems. And I think that when you encounter something new, you want to do the research. I love to do research. Okay, where are the answers? How do you figure this out? And then you just kind of, you know, learn this new thing and do it.
And do it.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
So that gets to the entrepreneurial piece of it. You went from those businesses to elected office. Mm-hmm. And you talked about the service piece, understanding that there's lots of folks who know that there's a next step in their life, but don't know exactly what it is. If they want to start a business or if they want to move into an elected position, what advice do you give them?
I never intended to open a coffee shop. Many of these things that I did in life, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to open a coffee shop. Actually, my husband and I had begun to purchase properties as rental properties. Mm-hmm. We found out we were a pretty good team at that. We first bought the duplex he was living in before we got married. The owner of the duplex, there was going to be a big tax change in capital gains law. And we were looking for a home to buy as we were about to get married. And the owner of the duplex said, I really want to sell this property before the tax laws change. You know, make me an offer. And I made him an offer. And the next thing he said, well, okay, I'll have a lawyer call you. And we owned a duplex. And we found out we were a good team. So we continued on. And right before the recession, about 2008, we purchased a property that my husband had been mentored by this gentleman. He'd worked on this property probably when he was 16 years old. And he'd said, I'll sell you that property someday. And it was a mixed-use property in the Beverly neighborhood. So some apartments up and commercial space down. That was really our first commercial space we'd ever purchased. Mm-hmm. And of course, the apartments were easy for us. We knew we'd had apartments before, but the commercial space and going right into the recession, there was nobody coming forward and to rent that. And I said to my husband, you know, I think we're going to have to develop this. And I said, I think we should do a coffee shop. And I think I was thinking about that first cappuccino I had back in Italy, and that you really, there was no place to get one around here. And maybe we should do that. And so we gutted the place. I believe in good design. So we hired a great architect. And I'll tell you, he submitted it to the American Institute of Architects and won an award with it.
Oh, wonderful.
And I had told him, I said, "Don't no fancy materials, make it things we can get it at the big box stores."
Right.
And we did the build out ourselves. And Plate 21 was born 15 years ago. We learned a lot through that process. But this would be some advice that I would give. I attended some coffee trade shows. And I always say to people, if you're interested in opening a business, there's got to be a trade show.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a place where you will find expertise and success. So go to a trade show. Go to where the experts are. Go to where the, and stand really close to the successful people and listen very carefully. So that would be that. I did that right away. Here's another piece of advice, because I will tell you, those of us with the entrepreneurial spirit, and I don't care if it's a five-year-old with a lemonade stand or somebody in retirement who's reinventing themselves as an entrepreneur, that entrepreneurial spirit is a very do-it-yourself kind of, it can get in the way, okay? Meaning, you may not think you need advice, and so you do.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many resources in our community. And one of the things that I did when I worked in economic development for the city of Toledo was I worked with some of our other entrepreneurial support partners to create an incredible resource called The Ramp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at tolramp.biz. TOLRAMP.biz. And we named it The Ramp because at whatever point in your business progression, there are resources for you. Everything on there is at no charge. You can get your business plan. The library is a great place. The business department, the library is a great place to get a business plan. The Small Business Development Center, which is hosted by the Chamber of Commerce and funded by the Ohio Department of Development, what a great place to get the financials to go with that business plan. There's never been more importance in being a certified minority or woman-owned business.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many advantages now to doing that, both for contracting and some great financing that's available. Go to the Minority Business Assistance Center. There's so many programs available, so many resources. But a lot of times that do-it-yourself entrepreneur says, oh, I've got this. Well, I say, be humble enough to let somebody look at your business plan and your financial plan, because having that vetted by those experienced eyes is so important. So I would say, and then my third piece of advice, you know, after, you know, go where the expertise is, get those other eyes, get those resources, and get those other eyes to look at your plan. But I would say, bring something fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Don't, you know, when I first opened my independent coffee house, and really there weren't very many independent coffee. We had an amazing coffee scene in Toledo right now.
Mm-hmm.
But people would say, do you know what you should do? And they would recommend something that the chains did.
Uh-huh.
No. Bring something fresh. Bring something new. I would also say that there are so many opportunities now to be entrepreneurial within the corporate world.
Right.
Because corporate America has realized that there is an entrepreneurial revolution going on and that they should embrace it. So they're mm-hmm. working hard to create a culture that welcomes ideas and sort of that entrepreneurial, you know, let's think about new ways of doing things.
Right.
So they've coined a phrase, intrapreneurship. And so I think that not everyone needs to be an entrepreneur to find a place where their ideas can be welcomed. So I just want to stress that too.
No, but I think all that's hugely important, because so many times you don't know what you don't know. And you could be so passionate about what it is you believe or think or whatever your idea is for your business that, you know, sometimes you kind of forget to stop and ask where some common pitfalls are or where other people might be able to help you out to make your path a little smoother.
Something else I feel very strongly about is that we focus so much on startups
mm-hmm.
that we really need to pay more attention to the scale-ups. We need to focus on helping those businesses that have gotten that foothold move mm-hmm. to the next level, and especially women-owned businesses, because they tend to get stuck at a certain revenue level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tell people to dust off that business plan, go back through the cycle, and make new goals. I also say, don't feel bad about making a profit.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what businesses are for. And it gives you more ability. You can do more good for your community.
Mm-hmm.
You can be that example to other women and to other entrepreneurs. But you do want to make sure that you're always setting new goals and that you're scaling up to new mm-hmm. heights. And so don't get stuck in that revenue level.
Well, I know that we talk a lot about small business development. Why is it so important?
First of all, most of the job creation happens at the small business level, and wealth creation in families happens with those small businesses. And the next big thing comes out of a small business.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just take our community. We're known as the Glass City.
Mm-hmm.
Think about all the things that we can look back and say, well, thank goodness Edward Drummond Libby moved to Toledo and established Libby Glass, the museum that we all love, right?
Mm-hmm.
Libby Glass. If one business can have such an impact on a community, and you can think of so many startups that have become the next big thing. So we always want that new spark, that new entrepreneurial venture to be, you know, we want to fan the flames of that. So entrepreneurship is so important. While I was at the City of Toledo, we tried to put some programs together that would help entrepreneurs or the developers, the owners mm-hmm. of the buildings, move these projects along. And so the programs that were really successful, we put three of them together and called them the Vibrancy Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And it included addressing the outside of the building with a facade grant that was very successful. And, you know, facades can be catching.
Mm-hmm.
If one exterior gets improved, then the next one doesn't look,
absolutely.
You know, then, you know, it's kind of like fixing up your house. If the neighbors fix mm-hmm. up there, you know, it's like, gee, honey, I think we need to fix up ours. So facades can be catching. But then also addressing, this was really my dream program, was the white box, the mm-hmm. interior. So first floor commercial spaces that were vacant. And, you know, mm-hmm. some of them have been vacant for decades mm-hmm. because of these financial constraints. So being able, we would cover a fire code upgrade,
mm-hmm.
Americans with Disabilities Act code upgrades, like those restrooms mm-hmm. or accessibility paths, those kinds of things, or building code upgrades. And then the third piece is something that we've had for a long time, which is the community reinvestment areas, which those improvements can be tax abated for mm-hmm. up to 15 years. So those three things together were bundled together as the Vibrancy Initiative. And they start making a bad math problem turn mm-hmm. into a viable project. And you can see projects all around the City of Toledo that the project owners will tell you, but for those programs, this would not have happened. And that's so exciting. And then we often saw entrepreneurs who got into trouble because they didn't know what was required. And again, you can take that back to that do-it-yourself attitude.
Yep.
I just started wrenching on my building. I just was trying to make something better. And now you're telling me there are building codes. Well, those codes are there for safety,
it's
for good reasons.
Ask for resources.
Yes.
And help.
Yep. And so we created something called Permit Planner. Mm-hmm. And we took all of the zoning and building codes and all of those incentive programs
mm-hmm.
because we have parts of the city that are overlays where there are certain, maybe there's an historic overlay, so you might have to ask special permission. And
oh,
so we put all of those things into Permit Planner, and you can go in and you can say, I'm going to open a yoga studio, and it will show you what permits are required, and it'll add up the cost of those permits and tell mm-hmm. you if there are any incentives. And then the final thing we added to that was you can request a pre-development meeting where you
mm-hmm.
can get together even virtually. You can do it as an online meeting, but you can have a meeting with all of the departments of the city that you're going to have to interact with to get your project done
mm-hmm.
so that we can prevent people from getting stop work orders
right.
and things like that and get in front of that. And so those entrepreneurial services were my favorite things that I was able to work on when I worked in economic development for the city, because I knew that we were helping some of the smallest businesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are kind of services you would think of being provided when a big employer comes to town, but it was wonderful that we could provide those to yeah. some of the smallest businesses as well.
You're again paying it forward, you know, taking some of the lessons that you learned, some of the opportunities you had, and figuring out how do I offer this on a larger scale to people in the community. You have a very unique perspective on the region as someone who was born and raised here, grew up here, you know, was educated in regional schools, and Now you're at the Toledo Metropolitan Area Council of Governments. What have you seen in how the region has transformed, how it's changed, and does that give us a signal to where we're headed next?
When I was a child, we were kind of at our acme, right? Our population, near 400,000, we had some Fortune 500 companies, and a lot of my lifetime we saw a decline. And I think with that decline came a general feeling, almost kind of a feeling of depression, right? You know, it's like we're losing ground. It just doesn't feel good, right? You get terms like Rust Belt and, you know, people feel like, well, what hope is there for our region? Boy, has that turned around. And we see incredible projects happening in our community. I mean, obviously the Riverwalk is transformative and Glass City Metro Park. I mean, I was so proud when my whole family was here at Christmas and we skated together and it was so wonderful to be able to show that off. But, you know, we've done some incredible things together as a region. I like to say that probably to me, the most important economic development move that we've made in our generation would be regional water, because that was hard. That was hard. That took trust to make an agreement like that. But, you know, when companies look at a region and they think about siting their business here, they really want to see, they look at utilities, and they want to see stable governments, they want to see stable utilities. And when they look at 40-year agreements for water contracts, and when they see that we're working collaboratively to make decisions about capital improvements to our water system, that looks good to them. And when we make decisions like that together, that bodes well for our region. And I think that ushered in a new era of collaboration.
Right.
And of course, that's what we're all about at TMACOG, right? You know, convening people and collaboration and the idea that we can be stronger together. We can have a stronger voice of advocacy and that we can accomplish bigger things together. And so I think, especially for young people, I like to say that there are things happening in a lot of places, but you as a young person can make things happen in Toledo. I feel like you've been here forever. But I mean, you're such a part of our community, but you're still relatively new here. Yeah. And I wonder if you feel this way, that access is so easy in Toledo. If you really need to get in front of a CEO or a mayor or someone in our region for a young person, we can get you in front of them. Because, I mean, I don't know if it's just because we're Midwest nice or if it's just a Toledo thing, but access is easy in Toledo. And if you feel like you know everybody in Toledo, it's because you probably know everybody who's doing something in Toledo. And I feel like this is a place where you can make change and you can do things. Where I think we're at right now is a new feeling of optimism. Things are happening and people feel really good about the future. And we're not afraid to work hard in Toledo. We make our own luck.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's incredibly navigable on many different fronts. I remember the first time I drove by one of the signs that says you'll do better in Toledo. That was the first time I had seen it. And I'm like, but you understand, like once you've been here, you understand what that means. You can find access. You can find opportunity. You can find a common group who believes in some of the same causes, values, and mission that you believe in. And so it is a wonderful place to be able to grow ideas, to move organizations. It has that impact.
And people will support you. They will help you. If you have an idea and you reach out, you will find support.
Absolutely. So TMACOG is this wonderful acronym that a lot of people don't understand what TMACOG is and does.
Right.
And so can you talk a little bit about the role that TMACOG plays in our region?
So TMACOG as an organization, if you take the largest footprint, we're a council of governments. So I spoke a little bit about the fact that we have 83 governmental members. Now that includes the villages and the townships, cities, counties, but it also includes special districts like park districts, port authority, the metro parks, and schools. Owens Community College.
We're a proud member of
right,
TMACOG.
And as well as the K-12 school districts and University of Toledo, Bowling Green State University. And so we have the governmental members. We have that Council of Governments, which is really interested in promoting good government and educating our governmental members. The idea that we're promoting ethical government. So that's, you know, we do our TMACOG texts. We have a new program where we bring together different affinity groups. We have administrators from some of our townships and villages, and they can learn from each other and share best practices. We've had fiscal agents come together. So those are some of the Council of Government activities that we do.
Okay.
But also within that border, we do transportation planning. We're a metropolitan planning organization. And so that's for Lucas and Wood counties. And that's really how a lot of these councils of governments were formed all across the country, was because in the 1960s, the Federal Highway Act was passed. And that's when the Federal Highway Administration said, hey, we don't want regions competing for federal highway dollars. We want you to work together to prioritize projects in your region. And so dollars flow from the Federal Highway Administration to the Ohio Department of Transportation. We're District 2. We're allocated a certain amount of funding. And the jurisdictions within that planning organization, they present projects. And they come together and they score them based on, do they make that intersection safer? Do they improve air quality? Which roundabouts, by the way, do improve air quality because people are not idling at a traffic light. They do improve air quality. Or is this going to help economic development? So these projects are scored, and the communities together make the decisions about what projects are going to be funded. So again, it's that regional collaboration and what's best for our region. So we do that transportation planning. We also create long-range plans. Right now, we're in the process of creating a long-range plan that looks at our transportation needs out to the year 2055. And we're seeing some really interesting things. We're hearing that people are definitely interested in passenger rail. We're hearing that people are very interested in what we call active transportation, improved opportunities for pedestrian and bicycle transportation. So we're looking at that. But we also look at things like freight. Mm-hmm. How can we move freight effectively? And so this plan takes a broad look at our future transportation needs. And we create a legislative agenda. What do we need to let our legislators know about our transportation needs? We've been advocating strongly for a better way to get to our state capital. We're the only region in Ohio that doesn't have an effective interstate connection to Columbus. And so we as a region have been coming together to say we'd like a way between Waldo and Delaware County there. There's 38 traffic lights. It's been getting slower and slower to get to Columbus. So we have that transportation planning piece. We also do water quality planning. We have several EPA grants. So we're involved in water quality planning for wastewater and for stormwater. So we do those things as well. But I think the most important thing to know is that we bring people together to mm-hmm. solve problems in our region and to promote collaboration. And so I think a really great example would be people are watching the Chessie Circle bike path and grow piece by piece. Mm-hmm. And it's connecting Lucas and Wood counties, and pieces are being added. There are so many partners. We have to bring those partners together, and it's very complex. The Metro Parks are involved, Wood and Lucas counties, different cities. But, you know, roads and paths, they don't stop at jurisdictional lines. So being able to do those projects in our region across those borders, it's so important.
Well, and it sounds like that's been a sweet spot for TMACOC, that, mm-hmm. Things that might be a little more onerous for one municipality or another, TMACOC can bring everyone together for a common goal or a common cause.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I am curious about the passenger rail, because my understanding is that it's something that's been talked about for some time, but hasn't quite made it. What does it look like? Because there's trains and there's trains.
Well, there's no shortage of passenger rail advocates in Northwest Ohio. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the first groups that wanted to meet with me when I was first elected to Toledo City Council was the passenger rail advocacy group. And we know that folks with disabilities are interested in passenger rail. Senior citizens are interested in passenger rail. There are incredible opportunities for workforce development, moving workforce with passenger rail. Mm-hmm. But there hasn't been any movement. Well, actually, there has been just recently.
Oh, fantastic.
A program called the Corridor ID Program, a federal program identifying corridors that can either be upgraded or can be newly developed. There was recent announcement, it was last November, that we got the announcement that four corridors in Ohio were identified for the first stage, which is a general study. There was no local match required, so $500,000 for each of the corridors. There were 69 corridors identified nationwide, four of them in Ohio. Now, the one that TMACOG was advocating for most heavily, and we were doing that in partnership with our peer organizations in Cleveland and in Detroit, is the corridor from Cleveland to Toledo to Detroit to Chicago. And Cleveland to Toledo already exists, but it's slow. So we're hoping that this will result in faster and more frequent trains. But Toledo to Detroit, imagine the possibilities. Mm-hmm. There have been two studies done. TMACOG partnered with the city of Toledo on one of those studies. They show that this is very viable, and Amtrak has been very supportive of this. As a matter of fact, you can buy a ticket from Cleveland to Detroit right now, mm-hmm. but when you get to the train station,
you have to get on a bus.
You get on a bus. And so we're so excited about the potential for this because we know that we share workforce with Cleveland and Detroit. We know that we share a tremendous amount of tourism. Our zoo, our museum bring people to Toledo. Think about it. Both Cleveland and Detroit have national sports teams. My beloved Detroit Tigers and the Cleveland Guardians and there's basketball, football, mm-hmm. hockey.
And the airports
and workforce. There's so many people. And remember, it's not just the destinations, but it's the points along the way. And that's what this first study, the scoping, will do. It'll kind of look at, you know, what would be the stops. There is some question about the Detroit piece. Would it go to the airport and sort of onward to Detroit? Would it go straight to Detroit? What's that going to look like? There would be two more phases then in the planning portion of it, and that would require some local match dollars. And that's why it's so important that locally we keep that advocacy piece up, that we talk about how excited our region is. We hosted a whistle stop tour. All Aboard Ohio came to our train station, which, by the way, is where the TMACOG offices are. And we had over 100 people. A lot of leaders of our local organizations came, and we had some great speakers, and we presented some of the evidence from the studies that showed the economic impact, how the ridership is expected to be, just really the evidence that is there for the Toledo to Detroit route. So it's important that we keep that kind of advocacy up and that we keep talking about the enthusiasm for that, because we know that not all 69 of those identified routes is going to get built.
Absolutely.
And we want to make sure that our route is built.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, that would be exciting. And you know, I think about all of the opportunities and how many times that people who take day trips to either one of those places. And so to simplify that, to encourage it by passenger rail is exciting.
Estimates are that it would be affordable enough that people could use this as workforce movement, as workforce transportation, that it would be affordable enough that they could take this passenger rail to work. And as car ownership becomes more and more expensive, as we see the tremendous rise in insurance costs, maintenance costs, gasoline costs, and the cars themselves, these alternative methods of transportation are so important.
Well, and even as you see more and more people don't get their driver's licenses, that was a rite of passage for adulthood that really doesn't have the same kind of stature anymore.
No, it doesn't. And so we know that there's tremendous interest in this. And you're right. It isn't, young people do not crave their driver's mm-hmm. license in the same way that they did in our youth.
So one of the things that I'm excited about that we've gotten an opportunity to partner on in the TMACOG convening spirit is the Water Workforce Coalition. And so that is an initiative that TMACOG provided leadership for that involves the city of Toledo, Owens Community College. We're very proud to partner with it. Can you tell everyone a little bit about what the Water Workforce Coalition is?
Absolutely. You know, this program, I think it embodies the goals that I have for TMACOG, where we see a need in our region, mm-hmm. we find resources, and then we create a program that meets that need. It is getting national attention because it meets a national need. Mm-hmm. There is a crisis in the wastewater and drinking water treatment plants across our nation in staffing those plants with licensed operators. And without those operators, those plants cannot be open. Many of the operators that are working today came on board after the passage of the Clean Water Act. And that would have been in the 1970s. Nationwide, it's expected that about 50% of those operators will retire in the next 10 years. Locally in Northwest Ohio, over 40% of them are expected to retire by the year 2028. This is dire. And yet, the test that they have to pass to become a level one licensed operator has a national pass rate of 20%. And then you have to spend 2,200 hours in a plant, working in a plant. So this is especially hit some of our rural plants hard. And then once someone has had their 2,200 hours, they've passed that test, then they are poached by either the private sector, which also hires operators, or by another plant that can pay more. Now we really have a situation that's just untenable. So how do we meet this need? And that was what we collaborated together with the operators from the wastewater plants and drinking water plants throughout the region, and with Owens Community College, to bring together a coalition. And we wrote a grant application to the EPA, $500,000, to create a comprehensive program. And this is what, in speaking with folks from the EPA, this is what they've praised us so much for, is we didn't address a part of the problem. We really addressed the entire problem and created a program that attracts students, non-traditional students. We reached out to non-traditional students, went to job fairs, reached out to folks all across the region, letting them know, because part of the problem, I think, is the lack of visibility for these great jobs. This is a STEM job, STEM skills, well-paid. They're municipal jobs, so you're often getting into the OPERS retirement program.
Good, stable benefits.
Absolutely. And you start out as a level one, but you can rise all the way to a level four license, and you can run a plant. And many of the municipalities offer educational reimbursement. So you can grow with this program. But I don't think the visibility was there. I don't think you could ask a 10-year-old, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be a water operator. But there is so much opportunity here. I think we had over 400 people express interest in the program because of the outreach, but we added in so many pieces, a 16-week course, 4 days in the classroom, and 1 day in a plant. So they're really getting that hands-on experience, mentoring, actually working with an experienced operator. So they're getting that mentoring. And so it's not just academic learning when they're sitting down to take the test. They're actually saying, oh, yes, I know that from the plant. I understand that as an applied understanding.
And they need so many of those hours to be able to even sit for the exam.
Exactly.
And to be able to move it forward. And so I think it's been a fantastic opportunity.
Absolutely. And we're about to graduate the first cohort. There's a plan for three, possibly four cohorts as part of the grant program. I guess we can let the scoop out. So far, eight students have taken the test, and drum roll, eight students have passed the test.
Absolutely.
So this is phenomenal. And I think this is already getting attention as a potential national model of how to really address this national problem. But I think the reason that we've had so much success is that we brought everyone around the table. Call it the Water Workforce Coalition. And I think that's the key. We had people at the table who understood how to market the opportunity. We had people who understood why it was so hard to pass the test. We had people from the plants, actual operators who were there at the table, educators like yourself and your staff who understood what it was going to take to prepare people for the test. We had everyone at the table talking together to create a really comprehensive program. And that's what collaboration is all about. So I'm so proud of this program. And I think that it's just going to continue to get more attention because it really does address the problem. And I think we're going to see it replicated in other areas. And I think we're going to see it sustained in our area because we're not even scratching the surface of the need here.
Not at all.
And you know, I have been thinking about how we can apply this to other areas where we see need in other positions that aren't being filled. There are a lot of people talk about these opportunity occupations where there you can begin to work right out of high school. And I will tell you that municipal government has a lot of these opportunities, but there are also opportunities to continue to progress. And as I said, many local government jobs also offer tuition reimbursement. So I think this idea that you can earn and learn and continue to progress, it's something we want to explore. If it works for the water workforce, what are some other ways that we can partner to fill positions that are critical in our region and really keep our region moving? We can offer people opportunities to grow in their careers and yet earn at the same time. So I think the success of this program can be a model for some of those positions.
I was thrilled when I saw you and you said you had gone to your national conference. When you, you know, presented what we've done as a, you know, kind of an FYI, that people were so amazed and wanted more information. And how did you do that? There were people, like you said, engaged from every aspect of this. And to have Mary Kaczynski be able to not just say, okay, this is the curriculum that I've always done, but to say, okay, here's what's important to work with the treatment providers and the EPA to see, okay, here are the essential elements. And how do we repackage this in a way that works for the incoming student and for the treatment plants is hugely important, the water treatment and the wastewater reclamation areas. And so I think that it's a great example of how no one is reinventing anything other than the process, the pipeline, and trying to figure out how to work together to meet the need. Everyone brought their own expertise to this to figure it out. And in terms of the career trajectory and the pipeline, you're so right. And that fits so much of what we do as a community college, because we understand that not everyone is coming in to a situation from the same life experience, the same point. And it's important to give people the opportunities for laddering. I mean, a lot of people came into the information fair. Some of them were really excited about it. And some of them were like, oh, this may or may not be for me. And so, you know, you have all of those, but to have a waiting list for a brand new program is pretty spectacular.
It is. And I agree with what you said, that everybody brought the skills that we needed.
Mm-hmm.
But if we hadn't brought everybody together, it wouldn't have worked. So
it
was bringing everybody together that made it work. And, you know, I think the plant tours really helped the success of the students, because if you haven't been in a plant, how would you really know that this was a fit for you?
Mm-hmm.
So I think being able to conduct those tours, let those potential students see, you kind of know right away, is this an environment that I want to work in? You know, you would know, I like this, I like this environment. I think this is a place I fit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we raised that visibility. I think that was a great piece of it, but it wasn't a purely academic piece. It wasn't, you know, any one of the pieces wouldn't have worked. It was bringing that coalition together. We solved the problem together. Mm-hmm. It's made it so successful.
Absolutely. Yeah. In addition to transportation and water, air quality is another important aspect of TMACOG's work. And so we know that that's been a top priority. Can you talk a little bit about why it's important and how do you engage the community or get them the information they need regarding air quality?
You know, air quality is one of the areas where we really do engage the public. But we do get some funding to be able to do outreach for air quality. And, you know, let's start with people first. That's always the best way to go. We do have a higher than average number of people in our community that are impacted by health problems caused by poor air quality and things like asthma, COPD. Mm-hmm. And so we want to be able to let people know when we're having poor air quality days. Mm-hmm. And so we do have a couple of tools on our website. And so people can go to www.TMACOG.org. And then /air. And what they're going to see there is air now, and they can put their zip code in, and they're going to be able to see what the air quality is right in their area. And then also they're going to see forecasts. We work with the city of Toledo to create air quality forecasts. And there are some recommendations. You know, you've probably seen ozone's one of our number one, you know, air quality problems. And so there'll be recommendations like don't mow your lawn during peak hours, don't grill, things like that. But also letting people know that maybe they should, you know, with health issues, letting them know that they should be indoors during those times. But things that we can do to help improve air quality. We do gas cap testing, and we've got some gas cap testing events coming up, and there's going to be a lot of advertising around those gas cap testing events, and they'll be in communities throughout the region. So you can stop by one of those gas cap testing events. You'd be surprised how many people's gas caps are leaking, and we'll give you a free new gas cap. And also, each of the events, we're going to enter then the folks who stop by, we're going to enter their name to win an electric lawnmower, which is another way that you can improve air quality. So we want to let people know what air quality status is. And then again, some of, the transportation scoring, again, like things like roundabouts are improving your quality as well. So educating the public, giving them important information, and then trying to do programs that will improve air quality. Mm-hmm. Very important.
Hugely important. One of the things that I've noticed is that your leadership of Team ACOG is really looking more at economic development. And so can you talk a little bit about your vision and where you kind of plan to take Team ACOG in the future?
So this is one of my favorite topics. Mm-hmm. And it is definitely a part of my vision for Team ACOG. And it's an area where we're going to be expanding our services. And one of the things I'm excited about is we're not going to be duplicating the services and the work that's being done in our region. We have some amazing people doing economic development in our region, and you can see the results. We've had some big wins in economic development, but where we're not winning is we're not receiving all of the resources from the Economic Development Administration that we could, because we are not designated as a region as an economic development district. There are about 400 of these districts throughout the country. There hasn't been a lot of data on these, but recently, the Urban Institute released a study showing where Economic Development Administration dollars have been placed around the country over the last 10 years. And these economic development districts have received 71% of EDA grants, 79% of the construction grants, and three times as much money per capita as the dollars for population living outside of one of these districts. So it is my goal for us to be designated as an economic development district. There are grants we can't even apply for. There's technical assistance we can't even apply for. So again, not duplication, but the people who are working in economic development could then say, hey, I've got a project, I've got someone who's looking at our region, or we're trying to help a business in our region. Are there dollars from the EDA that could help? We're going to be able to be there for them and be able to approach the EDA and say, here's some programs, here's some resources that could be helpful. In the meantime, I mentioned we do a long-range transportation plan. There's actually a long-range economic development plan. It's called the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategic Plan. And we actually have done two versions of this in our community. The most recent one was done by Bowling Green State University, their Center for Regional Development. We're going to be doing the next iteration of this. It's time to renew this, to do a new version of it, and we're going to be doing that. And so we're going to be bringing someone on as our first economic development specialist now, and they're going to be overseeing the updating and expansion of this plan. And I will tell you that one of my goals is really to educate our region on what is in that plan. I think we all need to have a single vision, right? We need to be speaking with one voice about where we want this region to go and our goals for the region. So I'm very excited about the opportunity to make this a meaningful plan and have it really reflect where we want to take our region. And then a plan has no value if you don't work the plan. And so we've had two iterations of, we call it the SEDS, acronyms, boy, I'll tell you.
And we've got them.
I will just tell you as an aside, when I was elected as a city council member, I went to our clerk of council and I said, there's got to be a list of acronyms. And I was given a sheet of acronyms. When I came to Team ACOG, I thought, well, I know what to do. I went to someone and said, hey, there's got to be a sheet of acronyms. They gave me a book of acronyms. Because think about it, we've got transportation and water quality. There's a book of acronyms. And I have to be careful because, you know, you can get real insidery and throw them around. So I always try to at least say first. But that said, that plan for economic development, we've had the plan, but we've never had someone whose job it was to make sure we're working that plan, measuring, putting metrics on it. How are we doing with that plan? And so that's what I look forward to. And being a resource to the people who are already working in economic development right now. So I'm very excited about the opportunity to bring these new resources to our region. Another thing that I'm very excited about in economic development is there's a reason that we've always made things in Toledo and been able to move them. There's some great statistics about Toledo's location and our region's location. We have an amazing port, and our port's really busier than ever. Cleveland Cliffs, they bring ore down from Minnesota and create their iron briquettes, and then they put them on rail. And we have a very busy freight corridor on rail. We move a lot of freight at the Toledo Express Airport. We are also at the crossroads of the longest east-west and north-south highways in the country. And if you draw a 500-mile circle around Toledo, 60% of the U.S. population lives in that circle. But what's really new and exciting is the Gordie Howe Bridge.
Gordie Howe Bridge.
We are excited about this. The current bridge that leads to Canada for our region is the Ambassador Bridge, a privately owned bridge. And Gordie Howe is not only going to be a huge bridge, but it's going to have kind of revolutionary new way of doing the customs. They're going to be offering so much more capacity of being able to process customs, and they're going to be able to move freight so much more quickly. So we're anticipating that this is going to have a lot of opportunity for our region. And so TMACOG used to host a freight conference every year, and we have not hosted that conference in many years. And what's very exciting is that a year from this August, in conjunction with the opening of the Gordie Howe Bridge, we are going to be hosting a freight conference, and we're going to be inviting America to come here, and logistics people and freight planners and people interested to say, hey, come and take a look at Northwest Ohio and see what we have to offer in logistics. And so we're very excited about that. So we hope that that's going to be an opportunity for us to sort of debut for the Gordie Howe Bridge. So we're very excited. And, you know, again, to go back to this idea of collaboration, we aren't going to do it alone.
Right.
We're going to do it with all of our partners, because this is just another opportunity for all of us to work together to take the greatest possible advantage of an opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, you know, at Owens, we really pride ourselves on being able to be good collaborators and good partners, but also our history and mission in economic development and workforce development. And so as you kind of look at what's ahead for TMACOG, how can Owens be partners with you to contribute to the success of the region?
I think we continue to look at that model from the water workforce. I think that, you know, the needs of employers are always changing. And I think that what we want to do is we want to make sure that we're preparing people. I mean, the students, we want to prepare them for jobs that are going to be needed. So I think that, you know, being aware of employer needs, and I know you've done so much to have the staff that can be interfacing with employers. But I think that's really the key, is that, you know, making sure that we're hearing what employers' needs are, so that students are going to have those opportunities when they graduate, and working with employers. And, you know, you are so involved in our community. And I think that that's really important. I think it's important that educational partners are there and are present, and you are. And I think that that's really key. I don't think that economic development is successful when it's in a vacuum. It's not just the economic developers. And I think that when we know that when companies look at us, they want to know, how's the public transportation? What are the educational resources? Sometimes they have very specialized needs. And I know that they can come to Owens and they can say, hey, this is what we need. And I know that you can customize programs for them. And I think that that's the role that needs to be there. And I think a community college can do that. You can be flexible. You can meet the needs of employers. You know, it's all about the partnerships. And the world is changing so fast that we all need to be able to be agile and change. And so I think incredible opportunities are coming our way, and we need to be working together and flexible. We're so glad that you're partnering with us.
Well, likewise, we're happy to partner. Sandy, thank you so much for being here. I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I can't wait to get on a train to go to Detroit or Cleveland or Chicago. And I really appreciate your leadership that you've had in the region and now at TMACOG. So thank you for being on the Conversations podcast today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Sandy, thank you so much for being with us. We're so grateful for your commitment to and your hard work on behalf of this region. And thank you to all of our listeners. Until next time, take care.